Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Are you tired of juggling contacts, manually following up, and deals falling through the cracks? We can fix it so you never lose another lead, enabling 24/7 sales and support via an AI that learns your business. Ready to close more deals with less hassle? Get a free trial of our marketing automation at thebuzzcrm.com.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice on Cannabis Radio. I'm your host, Bethany Moore. I'm the Director of Communications at the National Cannabis Industry Association. Today, I'm happy to welcome my guest, Harry Bernstein. He's the Executive Director of Verde Compliance Partners. As General Counsel of a beer and wine wholesale distributor for nearly two decades, Harry handled all legal matters, including contracts, franchise agreements, labor negotiations, as well as state and federal licensing and compliance. And for the last 19 years as an attorney, he's assisted individuals with healthcare matters and special needs, including representing clients at federal administrative hearings at the Social Security Administration. His company, Verde Compliance Partners, is a national consulting firm focused on guiding clients through federal cannabis permitting and regulatory compliance. The firm prepares and navigates cannabis growers and processors through the regulatory, legal, and administrative requirements necessary to comply with current and future federal regulations. The team consists of senior level experts with decades of experience consulting in federal, state, and local permitting, regulation, and compliance in the cannabis, alcohol, and tobacco industries. Harry, welcome to the show today.
Bethany, thank you so much for inviting me and for having me.
Wonderful. So in addition to what we've already covered, let's learn a little bit more about you and your background and other things that you've done in your career before moving into this cannabis realm.
Right. You've mentioned quite a bit of it, which is great. But as you said, my background was really in the beer and wine industry. Our family, my grandfather, started his company in 1933 when they repealed alcohol prohibition. So there's a lot of similarities here. When alcohol prohibition was repealed, a lot of the beer companies went to ice houses, and he was an old ice man who carried those blocks around on his back. So I worked in the beer and wine business for many years, started as a kid in the warehouse and worked my way up through the sales department. And then when that industry, like a lot of others in the 90s, started to consolidate, we kind of saw the writing on the wall. Breweries and wineries and liquor companies were merging, and they really didn't want to work with local distributors, and pretty much said, it's time for you guys to get out of the business. Fortunately, I had my law degree because, again, that industry is extremely regulated, and it was something we thought was necessary to have somebody in-house with law background. I took that degree and started my own practice, did some consulting for those industries, a lot of employment and workers' compensation law. And then I kind of morphed my practice over the years to working with people in the disabilities community. And that was pretty much what I was doing, and still do a lot of that, helping people. When I sort of slid into the cannabis industry, it's something that's a little bit a different way of getting here. So
absolutely.
That's my primary background.
Yeah, that was a little bit of hopscotching around a lot of different industries and roles. That's very interesting as well. So let's talk about that slide into the cannabis industry. Like, what was that like? And what was your relationship with the plant, as we like to say?
Right. So it really wasn't on my radar. I had enough going on, although it was starting to creep into the Social Security area because of the conflict with federal law there. I had clients not in Ohio to that point because we didn't legalize it for medical in 2015, but there were clients legally treating it in their state using cannabis. But under Social Security law, you can't be using any illegal drugs and still receive benefits. So there's clearly a conflict there. But again, I really didn't have an idea as to what was it going on and digging into it. But when Ohio did pass in 2015 a medical use bill, I had some family members who were open-minded but did come from that reefer madness generation and said, you know, my doctor's telling me to look at this. Well, he's not telling you. He's recommending. They can't tell you. And I started to research it, and I saw some of the issues out there. Whether it be with the extreme limits that Ohio was putting on the product itself and the dispensaries. Even Ohio would let us go to neighboring states before dispensaries were open. And some of those things, I'm walking in and I'm scared as a parent at the time. My son was, you know, 14, 13 years old, and I'm worried because these people working the dispensaries really didn't know what they were talking about. So again, I started to throw ideas around. And then when 2018 and the Farm Bill hit, I started to potentially see some opportunities for consulting with companies. And that's where I started looking into it a little in depth. And then 2020 comes around and we see the Democrats gain full control of legislative and administrative branches. And I said, you know, legalization, or I should say, and I don't like that term myself, ending federal prohibition and reasonable regulation on the federal horizon was coming now. Now, I think a lot of us were a lot more optimistic in 2020 than we were in 2021, but that's something else. Mm-hmm. So I met with some colleagues of mine who came from the government side and said, you know, am I crazy? Or do you think this is how it's going to play out, that at some point the federal government is going to legalize it? When they do, they're going to create a dual system of, if you want to go the medical route, you'll go through those protocols and FDA. If you're going to be, we're going to regulate adult rec like we do alcohol and tobacco under the Department of Treasury's Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax and Trade Bureau. And we were of the same thinking that this is going to happen. And that's how we formed the idea from the company. Time means everything. COVID hit, so we put the launch on back burner, but then last year we really launched it and started working with not only cannabis licensees, but we found a lot of cannabis related businesses are coming to us and say, what are your experiences at the federal level? What can we expect? And that's really how I got here. It's just, again, taking the skills we had and applying them to cannabis because we see that as a similar, and I say similar, I don't say the same, but similar products that can, as recreation, and I don't like recreational use either, for adult use can be used to enhance your life, but they can also be used for medical treatment. And there is certain forms of alcohol that are used in prescription medicines. So that's how we're here. That's the long
story.
Very
interesting, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we at NCIA also prefer the term adult use over recreational as well. So totally get that as we're trying to compare to these other industries with, you know, somewhat similar regulations as we're looking toward, you know, national decriminalization and so on. So currently it is the year 2023, believe it or not. And like you mentioned the Farm Bill in 2018, and it feels like that was just a couple of years ago, but actually it was more like 5 years ago.
Right.
So here we are in 2023 and your company is launched and moving along. What are your goals for this year? And just tell me a bit more about what your company is up to.
Well, our goal is really to educate people. And I think that should be the goal. And that's certainly what a great job NCIA does. They're an incredible resource for education. And what we're trying to explain to our clients and to NCIA members today or any other podcast or news interview we do is that it's common. You can certainly wait until a bill is written and then 90 days later regulations are written, and then you can try to do what you need to do to get a federal license or comply with whatever the system's going to be. What we're trying to say is this is the way the U.S. government operates. They're not going to reinvent the wheel. Yes, cannabis is different, but we think we can help you because of our experiences in the alcohol industry as much as anything else. And mm-hmm. I really think, and when you look at the bills as they're written, and it was interesting because when Representative Mace put forward hers, I picked up right away that she is really specifically, and she wants to treat cannabis like alcohol. And again, I'm fortunate enough, I happen to live in Representative Dave Joyce's district, and there's been no better proponent for the product than Dave, especially when you look on the side of the aisle he's at. So these are conversations we'd be having. A lot of people aren't optimistic, but I am optimistic because I think this, we know number one, it's the one issue most voters will support. And number two, it's got support on both sides of the aisle. And it's really not going to alienate too many people if they come to a reasonable compromise. So that's where we're at. Again, they say the best day to prepare was yesterday. The second best day is today. There's lots of things you can start doing today. Even without knowing what the bill is, but knowing who you're going to be working with in the federal government.
Absolutely. Makes perfect sense. And I love that phrase that the best time to start preparing is yesterday, but if you're a little too late to the game, there's always today. I love that.
Yep.
All right. Let's take our first commercial break, and then let's come back after the break and take a little bit more of a deep dive into what some of that might look like. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice will return once we give a voice to our sponsors.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
All right, we're back on NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice, and I'm your host, Bethany Moore, with NCIA, and I'm talking with Harry Bernstein of Verde Compliance Partners. So to dive right in, the cannabis industry has a plethora of regulations to follow. Compliance is the name of the game. It's so crucial. In fact, some operators, if anyone's been listening to this show for the last 6 years, you've heard me say cannabis is more heavily regulated than plutonium. So let's start by talking about some of these complicated and challenging regulations that cannabis operators are already dealing with at the state level, since it is currently still illegal at the federal level. What are your thoughts on that, Harry?
I'll go back a little bit to the alcohol comparison. Mm-hmm. So when alcohol prohibition was repealed under the 21st Amendment, they specifically gave the states the rights to regulate alcohol sales and production within their borders, which, again, it's directly similar to what's going on now, except it's happened vice versa. The states are creating their rules, and then they're kind of waiting for the government to give them, the federal government to give them the go-ahead. And they're not even waiting. They're just doing it. So I think it can be done, but I also think you need some federal oversight. There's a lot of things the states – this is what they do. They usually wait for the federal government to create the regulations, and then they kind of go from there. So they had to develop their own. And obviously California, Colorado, Oregon came online first, and they did some things. And then a lot of states copied those things. And then other states learned from those things and didn't do similar things. Right. So I think, like anything else, it's going to be streamlined. It's very difficult. There's a lot of constantly changing things. You're going down The states gave extreme power to the municipalities, which they usually don't do, but in a lot of states and municipalities, are the regulations are affecting the business pretty significantly. So yes, to some extent, it is more heavily regulated. And I won't, you know, I can't speak to plutonium, but certainly more than alcohol. Yes. But it is very similar to alcohol. But what happens is, and you found this, and you see this as a real problem, is without federal oversight, when you have multi-state operators, they're really put in a bind because, you know, they're dealing with one set of regulations over in California, another set in Ohio, a third in Michigan, and a fourth in Massachusetts. So right. Those are the operations that are more difficult. Generally, they have more resources and more lawyers, though, so they're able to do that. So, and again, point being is it'll eventually work itself out because alcohol has been doing it for 90 years, the alcohol industry. So it'll eventually get through it. But they do need some oversight and some guidance for the federal government. And frankly, these businesses need access to money too. We also know the 280E problem and the other issues going on with the stigma of the industry itself. So,
right. Yes, we've got plenty of challenges and hoops to jump through and a mishmash of regulations depending on where you're operating. And you know, I feel for those multi-state operators who kind of have to almost reinvent the wheel when they move into a different state, depending on what right. the rules look like. Yeah. So,
I mean, one thing I do want to touch on too, and I don't know if you were going to get there, is that to some extent, the industry also has to regulate itself. And this is what we learned from the alcohol businesses. If you get bad actors out there, it makes you all look bad. So to some extent, and I know the industry is doing a much better job when I first looked into it, again, with guidance from NCIA and other groups out there to say, hey, look, we're only going to succeed if we work together. And we got to stop these guys who are coming in for a quick buck. So sorry about
yes.
jumping in.
No, that was an excellent point. And, you know, I have to stop and applaud the work that many of the NCIA committees have been doing to
yes.
to set the stone and set the tone and set the standards and explore what kind of standardization and regulations make sense and, you know, allow us to run our businesses better, faster, stronger, smarter, and also protect public safety. You know, all of these things are important. So I must applaud NCIA committees for all that they've been doing toward that effort as well.
Mm-hmm,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, so as far as the next stage or next step in all this, we're all just, you know, chomping at the bit for federal legalization. What do you think is going to happen on the regulatory side when that happens? Like, there are states that are more established with a cannabis market. Would they need to make huge changes, or could there be a smoother way to balance out the state regulations that state already has with any new federal regulations? How does that work?
Well, what will primarily happen, and again, we're going on the assumption, I think it's a pretty strong assumption at this point, that it's that cannabis will primarily be regulated by Tax and Trade Bureau, along with potentially some USDA and FDA. I don't think that the feds are going to require the states to change anything. I think they're going to say, states, do what you want.
Right.
So to that effect, I think to the license holders, to some extent, it's going to be a simpler process than dealing with the state, because really, when it comes to regulating alcohol and tobacco, the federal government's concerned about public safety. They're concerned about trade practices. They don't want unfair trade practices. And they're concerned about collecting their tax money. They don't put caps on licenses. So, yeah, you might have to get a license for every operation you own, but you're going to have to get a license. Again, that's no different than Budweiser, which has breweries all over the world. They have separate licenses for St. Louis and Columbus and LA. So that's going to be the same. What I would say is you're going to have to do a really, if you're a cannabis license holder, a really good job of keeping good records on who your owners are, your managers are, anybody with means and control. And when I say owners, it's generally 10% or more in equity, because that's where the government, the feds, will do a deep dive into the people here who have control. They want to make sure that people with certain types of, generally, we're not talking about any type of illegal drug conviction. They're looking more at fraud and violent crimes and tax crimes than they are. So keep your records up to date. The other thing is you're going to want to have a real good record of the source of your funds. Where did the funds come from to start your company? Again, they don't hand out licenses to people who generated their income from illegal activities. Now, that's going to be a gray issue, I think, that's going to be worked out. And then become familiar with, Department of Treasury, Tax and Trade Bureau, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and it's still called Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And find out how those
Merchants
people do
of
things.
Death. Because,
yeah, well.
You know that show, Thank You for Smoking, right? Or movie. Right. Sorry, go
on. Well, that goes back to Elliot Ness's, because when Prohibition created crime. We all know that.
Yes.
So not only did we get, when we ended Prohibition, we had to create a new group of law enforcement individuals to undo what they did through the Prohibition of alcohol. So, and again, I think a lot of these, I think if you close the door and turn off the media, you would have had a cannabis ending prohibition bill already. The problem is there's too much playing to the TVs, and we know how they talk. Sometimes, politicians have to be accountable for certain other things. But honestly, I think the biggest differences right now between passing a cannabis bill and not passing are working out details on taxes and social equity. 75% are probably they understand the product. They understand it's a useful product and it's not the devil's lettuce.
Right. Yes. Oh gosh. So many interesting names have been generated for cannabis over the years. Thank you for that breakdown. We're going to jump and take our last commercial break, and then we'll come back and wrap up this episode with Harry from Verde Compliance Partners. So stay tuned. We will be right back.
NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice will return once we give a voice to our sponsors.
All right, we're back on NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice on Cannabis Radio. I'm talking with Harry Bernstein from Verde Compliance Partners. And before we talk about lobbying, which is a really fun thing that NCIA encourages its members to get involved with every year, I want to ask if you have any other advice for both established cannabis operators as well as those who are just starting the licensing process or are licensee hopefuls in emerging markets like New York is like the hot new state now, right? What do you think there about any advice for cannabis operators?
So what I would say is it's probably kind of going back to that comment I made about starting on the second day and the first day. It's probably easier for the people just starting out because they can gather all the information they need at one time. You can gather a lot of what you gather for your state is also going to be required for the federal government. Once you gather that information, but additionally, you're going to have to gather other information for the federal government that you don't have to gather for the state. Again, depending on the state. Familiarize yourself with what both entities require, both the federal and state government, and start working on it and put those things together. Keep them in separate files, keep them in the similar database, however you feel you can handle it best. But you'll be ready again once the federal government starts to finalize what their regulations are going to be. As far as existing operations, I would do the same thing as well, but I would even take it a step further and say, you want to get a real good handle on all your ownership and management people, because you don't want to apply for a federal cannabis permit find out somebody has a five-year-old tax conviction on their record, and they're not going to give you a permit for your $20 million cultivation operation in California. You want to find that out now so you can make any business arrangements you need to do so that you have that clean record going in to the federal application permit. And then obviously the plug for myself, make sure you call. If you've got any confusion, always feel free to reach out to somebody who's experienced and can help you with all of these matters too.
Gotcha. Yeah. Great, great advice there. So to switch gears for the last couple minutes of the show here, Lobby Days is coming up again, NCIA's 11th annual Cannabis Industry Lobby Days. This is an opportunity for business owners in our industry to meet with congressional offices and talk to the staffers about our challenges and what we would like to see happen with our industry, and to garner support for some of the pieces of legislation that they may not be co-signers of yet, but typically we do see a surge of additional names being added to these pieces of legislation once they get a chance to meet cannabis industry operators. So I know you were able to join us in September 2022, just a few months ago, for the 10th annual. I love DC. I'm from the DC area as well. It's so great to be there, and it's a powerful feeling. What was your experience?
Yeah, and I love DC too. I about a half dozen of my best friends from college live in that area. They came from that area. I really enjoyed it, and I'll tell you for a few reasons. Number one, I met some great people in DC, and again, even in the beer and wine business, when you go to the conference, I'm not knocking the speakers, but you get more out of meeting the people in the business and just having conversation with them. And the team I was working with, we just mixed really well together. I really enjoyed it because I used to do it when I was in the beer and wine business. And it was like riding a bike. You don't forget how to do it. Not much has changed outside of security. But again, starting in the late mid-80s, people really began attacking the alcohol beverage industry. You know, they accused us of putting drunks on the road and killing their kids, and similar stories you hear in the cannabis business. And we knew, and at the time, there was a beer distributor in every district in the United States. And at the time, we figured out we had good leaders of our associations. That's what it came down to. Again, working together, setting aside differences between competing breweries and competing, you know, the beer guys worked with the liquor guys, worked with the wine. We went to Columbus and we went to DC, and we spent a lot of money holding events for these legislators, but also personally lobbying them and explaining to them, number one, we're good people. Number two, our product is a good product. Number three, we generate a lot of jobs and revenue for you guys.
Yep.
And number four, it got the support of the American public. So look, don't let a few people who aren't dealing in facts and science tell you lies. And then again, it comes down to, and I made this comment when I was sitting with the guys as we're talking to the congressman, is look, it's all about education and salesmanship. And when I say salesmanship, is you've got to sell these guys on the concept that it's good for them and it's good for their voters. Now, how's it good for them? Keeps them in their position, and it's helping their public. It's keeping the public safer, and it's generating jobs and revenue. You can't get much simpler than that. And again, gotcha. You're right, Bethany. They start to listen. It takes time, but they start.
Yes, it's a long game conversation with Congress for sure.
But
We do make progress. We absolutely do. Well, thank you so much for that insight, and I appreciate having you on the show today. I hope you can join us in May 16th, 17th, and May 16th, 17th, and 18th, 2023. We'll be back in DC. And of course, we are continuing our event series of evening networking receptions across the country between now and then as well. We're just in San Francisco, LA, and St. Louis, Missouri. And throughout March and April and May, we'll be in several other cities as well: Seattle, Boston, Miami, Portland, Oregon, New York, Chicago, Detroit, Oklahoma City. So I encourage NCIA members and non-members alike to register for as many of those events as you can. And Harry, thank you again for being on this show. Where can people find out more about your company?
Yeah, just go to Verde Compliance, V-E-R-D-E Compliance, C-O-M-P-L-I-A-N-C-E.com, VerdeCompliance.com. You can reach out to me through NCIA's bulletin boards and website as well. And then my email is harry@verdecompliance.com. As I said, just shoot us out a memo, a call. And now, yeah, it was funny. When the world went to Zoom, we were already prepared because we do business all over the place. So.
Gotcha. Great. All right. Thanks again. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice. Until next time.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Are you tired of juggling contacts, manually following up, and deals falling through the cracks? We can fix it so you never lose another lead, enabling 24/7 sales and support via an AI that learns your business. Ready to close more deals with less hassle? Get a free trial of our marketing automation at thebuzzcrm.com.